Aviation Quest to Sea 101, wind 270 degrees, 10 knots, runway 27 left, cleared for takeoff.
Aviation Quest to Sea 101, cleared for takeoff, 27 left. V1, rotate. Positive climb.
Aviation Quest CC. Stories from above. The views shared in this podcast are personal and for informational purposes only. They do not reflect any employer or aviation authority, and nothing discussed here should be considered flight training or regulatory guidance. Please always refer to official sources. This episode may also contain product placements. For further information, visit our website aviation-quest.ca.
Okay, welcome everybody once again to the Aviation Quest CC podcast. My name is Stefan. I'm one of the hosts, and this is episode 30. We've reached the big 30. Of course, I'm not here on my own. I'm never here on my own. With me, my good friend and proper professional podcaster, Jürgen. Jürgen, how are you today?
Again, some pressure on me. Yeah, I mean, we made it to episode number 30 at Aviation Quest CC. I'm really proud of, and it's not only us today. If you allow, Stefan, right away, we are joined by airline pilot, Navy aviator, and the voice behind the Ready for Pushback podcast, a professional who combines real-world flying experience with a deep understanding of pilot career development, Nick Fialka. Wow, what a guest, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing interview once again, Jürgen. Well done. And the interview went on for quite a while. So we've already decided we're going to keep this intro short. So just very quickly before we jump right in, I'm going to talk about today's YouTube channel video. As you know,
yep. YouTube channel name, by the way, is Aviation-Quest Podcast. So our podcast name is Aviation Quest CC, but the YouTube channel, sometimes, mis-searched or whatever, Aviation-Quest Podcast, because YouTube, certainly, we said it already in the first episode, I think, Stefan, the .cc is there not possible, certainly.
No, exactly. So if you watch us on YouTube, you're going to see a real-world flight. And today, Jürgen, we are going to your home country. We are flying with Austrian Airlines, and we are flying with the Airbus A321 from Vienna to Zurich.
Wow, beautiful. So almost real time because of the length of today's interview.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Okay, well, we're going to talk a bit more afterwards. But for now, I would say let's jump right in. It's an amazing interview. Nick is an amazing person. And I look forward to hearing it again.
Our guest today is airline captain, entrepreneur, and the voice behind the hugely popular aviation career podcast, Ready for Pushback. A man who has helped thousands of pilots prepare for their airline interviews, Nick Fialka. It's truly an honor to have you with us, sir.
Buddy, it's always awkward to hear somebody say nice things about me. And so thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with a fellow Austrian. And I am just so thankful that you would ask me to be on your show, brother.
It's, by the way, the very first, so to say, Austrian-Georgian interview. So good morning, Atlanta, USA, on our podcast.
That's right. To the Austrian listeners, I have to apologize because I do not speak German, but my dad spoke 9 languages fluently, and he didn't teach me any of them. I don't even speak English very well. So here we are.
You're a professional speaker, and I think a lot of people know you from your podcast. But to get us started here, Nick, your life overall seems incredibly full. So between flying, interview consulting, podcasting, family life, what does a typical week look like for you as we record this in almost middle of March 2026?
Yeah, middle of March. Well, it's funny that you had mentioned that because it is very full. We have My wonderful wife, Anna, and I, we have five kids, and the oldest is 14 and the youngest is 2. And so it's just chaos. And so this whole week has been children with different stomach viruses running around, as well as trying to manage school and things like that. But typically, like, my week looks like I usually fly 3 or 4 days every 10 days or so. And that will take me, I fly a 757 and also a 767-300. And so that'll take me either to Europe or South America or Central America, or just to Orlando back and forth. And then I'll get home. We'll hang out. We do homeschool the kids because it's very fun, because when I'm home, it's kind of the weekend. We go hiking and enjoy the beauty that the southeastern United States has to offer. And I try to get out, I try to knock out a couple interviews. Sometimes I'll have, I don't know, 3 or 4 interviews in a week. And sometimes I will have none. It just depends on how many I've blocked out and how far ahead of things I try to get. If we're going to go on a nice vacation, like in September, we went to Italy for 2 weeks. So I interviewed a few people and then took a break and didn't have to do anything while I was gone. So that's it. You know, we're the coaching. I'm always on LinkedIn helping as much as I can. I was reviewing a resume last night before bed of a young man that's trying to get to a regional airline here in the States. And so I'm talking on and on and on, but it's busy, but I also love it. This, the ability to, the fact that people listen to me is kind of ridiculous, and I don't take it lightly. And so I just like to talk, and you can tell by how I answer that long question, buddy.
Yeah, it was. I expected a longer answer because your life is super busy, I guess, in one word. But
well, hold on. Let me ask you a question then, since I know you've got everything, you got notes there, but like, you also run a fantastic podcast, and you're doing all your things. Like, how is your life different in Austria? Like, what's your week like? I'm really interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a former World Cup climber, and I still need my training every day. So in the moment, I usually start already with, so to say, a learning cardio. I enjoyed one of your podcasts today, this morning. Afterwards, I work. So I have an office, a really focused office hour. Often in the moment, I also invest there some time in improving my English. Afterwards, there's my training. It's normally on a normal day. And yeah, then it's back to office. This is where I am now, and I'm doing the work I have to do. Also coachings or whatever's on my agenda. Yeah, and then there's often a walk. Then I have a nap. Normally, I enjoy swimming in the evening and then back to work. Sounds crazy, but it works for me.
Wow. That's, listen.
It's a day of mine. Sorry.
We're going to dive down on that. I'm going to bring you on my show, and we're going to talk more about that, because you said that you had a nap, and that to me is the most amazing thing I've ever heard. I can't think of the last time I've had a nap. That's amazing.
It's like a second day for me. Back to you. This is a podcast about you, Nick.
It's us, pal. It's us.
Take us back to your beginning. So what first pulled you into aviation?
Oh, man. Well, like I mentioned in the beginning, my father is Austrian, and his mother escaped Hitler with him during the Anschluss. And so my grandfather was not as lucky. And so when they came to the United States, my parents had met, and we grew up super duper poor in the mountains in North Carolina. And, you know, I didn't know any better. We just had a good time. And I didn't really know anything about being a pilot. I didn't know you could be a pilot. I didn't know that was a job. I knew that this tiny town that I was in was full of nothing. It didn't have any opportunity. I had to find a way to get out. And it was I don't know why I felt that, because a lot of people, I still keep up with most people I went to high school with, and a lot of people stayed and they made great lives, and it's a wonderful town, and it's developed an awful lot, but I just felt this need to get out. And so, a local businessman from where we live called me to his house my senior year of high school, my last year, and told me and talked to me about life and things like that. And I was kind of going down a weird path, I was close to getting into trouble with the law and things like that. And he saw that and he didn't want that. And so he called me to not lecture me, but to talk to me and find out what I wanted to do. He's kind of the first person ever did that. And he ended up, at the end of that conversation, he asked me what I wanted to do. And I told him I wanted to go to college, but I didn't have any money, so I was going to join the military. And he asked me how much that cost, and I told him. And he pulled out his checkbook and wrote me a check for $20,000 and handed it to me and said, "This is your first year. The rest of them are up to you." And so in the U.S., yeah, like schools are super expensive, and I never expected to be able to go. So I actually got to go to school because of that generosity. And while I was there, I had to figure out another way to pay for the last 3 years of school. And so the military offered me a scholarship because I worked really, really, really hard. And if anybody is trying to join the military out of high school that might be listening in the United States, the easier way to do it from college is to get through that first year and apply for the 3 or 2 year scholarships, because there's way less competition. Anyway, it was a super big blessing. I ended up getting commissioned into the military. I flew helicopters. I flew the H-60, which we call the Seahawk. Some people call it the Blackhawk. Some people call it the Pave Hawk. So it's all the same helicopter. And I did that. I ended up flying the T-34, which is a 2-seater fixed-wing trainer that kind of looks like an old World War II fighter plane, but it's just a doesn't have any weapons on. It's just two people and analog gauges, and you send somebody on their way and hope for the best. And it's got the air conditioner from a Datsun B210 in it. And from there, I ended up switching over to flying the MH-53 Echo, which is that big helicopter. If you ever saw the Transformers movie, it's like almost 30 feet tall, and it's got 7 rotor blades, and it's 100 feet long, and it's tip to tip bigger than a C-130. Sadly, now they have the C-130J model, and that J model is bigger than the 53, but it's just the baddest helicopter you're ever going to see in your life. And I flew that. And as I went down the road, I took years off of flying, and I ended up working for a big consulting company doing finance for the Pentagon. And then I opened an RV park in Florida, like a caravan, a place to park your caravan when you're on holiday. So I did that for a few years. And then a friend of mine mentioned that I should look at the airlines. I went to a regional airline. I spent 5 years in a regional airline. I flew the Embraer 145 and the Embraer 175. And then I got hired by Frontier Airlines, which is a low cost carrier, kind of like Ryanair without all the good jokes, and the good Twitter account. So I flew at Frontier for one flight, and then I was hired by this major airline that I'm flying with now. I live in Atlanta, so you can guess. And it is just, I love flying, dude. I love talking about flying. I love flying. I love this job. I love the people in it. I love the fact that you would send me an email from across the world and say like, hey, look, I love flying too. Let's hang out. And I'm like, hell yes, let's hang out. So that is me in the longest possible way.
So you flew in the US Navy before the airlines, Nick.
Yeah.
How did that experience shape your professional mindset?
You know, have you ever done something? Okay, you like to work out, right?
Right.
Okay, are you pretty fit?
I climbed the World Cup. Yeah, it's not about Holy me, shit. But yes, I.
Yeah. Have you always been really fit?
No.
No. Okay. Do you remember? So I think about this in the same way. Like our children do gymnastics right now, and my oldest, he's been doing it for about 8 or 9 months. And he start like all these little kids are doing all these amazing physical feats. They're very strong. They can do all the jumping. They can do all the, they can climb these giant ropes. They've got the climbing walls and all the things, and they've got the ninja challenge obstacle course, and they can all do it. And he struggles to do it. But he's been after it day in and day out, and he's starting to develop and get fit and get strong like you are. Mm-hmm. And it's taking time, and it's not immediate, and it's slowly coming together. And that is what the military was for me, because I wasn't really great at it as far as like the leadership part and the being an officer and being responsible for stuff and people relying on you and you being good at handling that, or somebody gets arrested on the weekend and then you've got to pick them up and then not just pick them up and help them figure things out, but mentor them. I was not good at that. If you talk to anybody I flew with in 2003, mm-hmm. If you talk to any of them, they cannot believe that I'm sitting here offering advice, because they knew me. And so the military for me was a really slow burn, like getting ready and getting fit and getting like being able to do the things that you do, that you're like your fitness level is such that like you are a grown-up now and you are kind of at your peak. I'm an old man. And I am at, like, I feel like I'm probably at my peak of, like the leadership part of things, especially with flying, because it used to just be very internal, and I wouldn't talk about it. I wouldn't engage my people. Like, I think that the biggest thing that the military, taught me is that you can do it. I think the biggest problem that the military taught me is that I need to handle it myself.
Okay.
And that to me is what I've been working on for the 10 years I've been in the airlines, is not doing it myself and being, including expanding that team that I talk about on my show, getting around to those people. But that, like, that reliance on other people is what you learn outside of the military. The ability to know that if I lost my job today and I lived on the streets, that I could make sure my family survived. Like, that's the thing I think I got out most of the military, and the friendships. And so, yeah, it was a weird time. My first day of flight school in the Navy was September 11th, 2001. So okay. It was kind of defined that time. And I got out about 2.5 years ago. So it was a good, you know, good time.
Nick, before we change topic, allow me a last aviation question. What was the biggest adjustment when moving from military flying to airline operations, besides the people?
Besides long hair.
No, you mean I mean, the passengers and everything. I listen to some of your podcasts, so I don't want to answer the question myself.
Yeah, no, I love it. There's a couple things. Let's see. I would say definitely number one, it doesn't matter what country you fly for. If you are flying for your country's military, you have your life is pretty easy. It doesn't matter what aircraft you fly or what you're doing, because you are taking off from a spot that is controlled by your country's government. And you are landing somewhere, you are going to operate somewhere that is most likely controlled, like you have freedom of movement in that area. And, you know, whether it's a restricted area or you're out over the water far enough, or you're doing whatever on a range, the flying that you do, even if it's real world, even if you're in some country on an assault or whatever your mission is, that autonomy and that ability to kind of do what you're going to do, like once you learn it, it's cake and you got it. You want to kick your own ass, then go sit down, fly into Heathrow and then try to get off the gate at Heathrow and get in line and go fly and then turn back around and do a constant angle descent arrival into Heathrow and listen to the chaos and listen to like all the different things. When fly into Stuttgart and listen to them yell at you about how long your APU is on. It is so different in the communication is so much different in the airlines than it is in the military. Mm-hmm. Because in the military, you're your own person. Nobody can tell you what to do and you can give them the middle finger. But in the airlines, you're just one of a billion people. And it's just, it can be so hard to get off a ramp. It can be so hard to get to taxi out. It can be so hard to change a runway. All these things, because usually you jump in the jet, you light it up, and you take off in the military. But that is so much different. So that is a big, big learning thing, and I see it all the time. I work with so many military people getting into the airlines, and I like once they're in, getting the idea of the way the process works is tricky for them. The civilians, their biggest obstacle to manage is the fact that like they are good enough. Like they don't constantly comparing themselves to somebody that spent 15 years in the military, at least in the States, or feeling like they can't do it because it's just a bridge too far and they're too young and there's no way they're going to hire somebody like me. Like that is that. Feeling of inadequacy is a big mountain to climb. And so that is, you know, two different sides of the same coin.
Well, and once you were in, I just picked up, and also working with people, I think you were building a very, very solid bridge to our second topic in our podcast, Nick. How to excel in a person-to-person HR interview at an airline in 2026. Allow me a scenario-based question, Nick. So
Let me write this down.
Let's imagine a young pilot finishes flight school, meets all requirements, sends out applications, and suddenly receives that email. You're invited to an interview. So, Nick, what should be the first three things they do immediately?
Number one, drink a beer. Number two, drink a beer. Number three, drink. Yeah, that's right. Well, you skipped the hardest part, is how to get your dang interview. Because I feel like that is a big.
You mean to get even get invited is the hardest part.
Dude, it is so hard.
Oh, dude.
It is so demoralizing.
Go on.
And I will answer your
go
question.
On, go on,
however,
go on.
Do you mind if I meander into that first part? Because
absolutely. Go on.
Okay, cool.
Restructure this and make something in between. This is super interesting.
I hope you don't edit a single thing. That is my request because
we are live on tape and editing is forbidden at Aviation Quest to see unless there's a technical mistake. This is the rule. So go on, please.
All right. Well, I'm going to use all my curse words then. Okay. So first off, I love this because this is the question I get time and 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 time again is how do I get there? Because it doesn't matter what country you live in. It doesn't matter if you're trying to fly for Wizz or KLM or SkyWest or Envoy or Frontier or JetBlue or American or United or Delta or FedEx or UPS or Atlas or whoever. The fact of the matter is that you are in competition with the people around you plus or minus about 500 hours until you get to a major airline. And so when you are on this path, maybe you're a brilliant and somebody along the way got you into a cadet program or a pathway program to help you get on with an airline where it is a set, where you have gotten the opportunity to have the company cover your flight school and then bring you, you know, and bring you along the road. And then 10 years later, you get dropped off into KLM or whoever it is, mm-hmm. or Ethiopian, or, you know, pick your company. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful place to be. But if you are competing off the street for an airline job and you are trying to get noticed, a lot of it depends on luck. In the US, we have opportunities to get in front of recruiters. We have these conventions that they do 7 a year. Next year they'll do 8 a year, where you can go and get in front and meet the recruiters from these companies. And that's, you know, that's the first step. That's the first little step, is like getting your resume in their hand. The second step is consistency, and the third step is consistency.
But you need to show up in person before you get invited, so to say, on those conventions.
Yeah.
Is for you a must have done.
Yeah, you do. You have to show up in person. You know, you don't have to, but your odds are much greater to get an opportunity if you do show up. And think about it. Think about if you're living in Vienna, and you have a U.S. passport and all your FAA things, and you've got 2,000 hours flight time, and you want to go to a convention in Dallas, Texas, think about how much money that's going to cost you. I meet guys that fly in from India. I meet guys that fly in from Qatar. I meet guys that fly in from Lima, Peru, and they spend so much money. And it's so difficult to get out there. And that, you know, it's a huge, huge lift for them just for the first step, just for not even a guaranteed anything, just for, I'm going to just go do this one thing. And so that's very, very difficult. And my heart goes out to them. I go to every single one of them because I love to meet the people that listen to my show. I love to help how I can. I love to hear the story. I love to celebrate with them. I love to cry with them. I love to do all of those things. But back to your question, that first part, how do you get noticed? Your hours matter a lot. Also, It matters what you're doing and how you're doing it. And if you're showing progression in a career, if you're flying a Piper Cub or a 152, and you just own the plane and you've got 3,000 hours in it, like that might be okay. But if you were a flight instructor, you know how to handle adversity and you know how to manage other people. If you move on from there and do something that's more than just flying around an airport, if you get an opportunity to go fly some kind of cargo single pilot at night and you show that you can do the hard thing, or you get a chance to go, it just depends on what your story is. In the U.S., a lot of people will be doing aerial survey work where the plane flies over in a grid of space and they survey it with special cameras, or they'll drive along an oil pipeline to make sure there's no leaks, or they'll do transport for like human body parts, so like hearts and livers and kidneys and things like that. Or they'll transport, this is the most ridiculous thing ever, but they'll transport like rescued animals from one place to another. You know, the opportunities out there as you grow, as you find an opportunity to do something more and use a more complex aircraft and maybe something that's got an FMS or whatever the heck it's going to be. And those are incremental gains that you can do to separate yourself. But the key is to pick something that's going to fly you and not something that's going to let you sit around and not do anything, because there are opportunities to go fly to sit in the right seat of a jet, but you might only be flying 100 hours a year. Well, you're never going to get anywhere flying 100 hours a year, but you know, you need to get after it.
So you need quantity and quality hours.
Yeah. And very like, yes. And also study your ass off and don't fail anything. And if you do fail something, have a really good story about what it is and don't blame other people. I just talked to a guy yesterday about he failed a thing, and that guy talked in circles for 5 minutes before he answered, "Would you fail?" And that is a great way to turn somebody's ears off and not care anymore. All right. So that's the first thing. Now, your question back to it was, I'm young, I've finished training, I've got all my requirements, I've got my invite. What are the three things I need to do? Is that correct?
Celebrate. I think the first thing was celebrate.
Celebrate, yeah, we had beer was one. Schedule it after Oktoberfest. I would say the three things you need to do, if you have an invite for an interview, it doesn't matter what the interview is. The first thing is they're going to require a certain amount of paperwork, and it could be just a couple things. It could be your logbook. Hopefully you already have a digital logbook and you can just print it out and do all that stuff. But if you're keeping everything on paper, like, you've got to get all your paperwork in order. You have to make sure early on that everything is accounted for, because if you are not accounting for that stuff and you show up missing something, then the thing you're really missing is your opportunity, because it's gone and you may never get that opportunity again. So put everything in your favor, get all the paperwork together, get it detailed, organized, be like Jürgen with like, get up in the morning, work out, get your paperwork in order, take a nap, double check your paperwork, make sure it's still in order, work out again, take another nap and double check your paperwork. That is how you make sure that first step is done. The next thing you can do is understand your logbook. You need to know your logbook like it is your dissertation. You need to go through every hour and make sure it's correct. Especially if it's digital, it all adds up. But if it's not digital, you need to get a calculator. What's the German word for calculator?
Taschenrechner.
Yes. See, get it and add that thing up. Do it twice. It takes a long time. It's very frustrating, but do it. Look for duplicate entries. Do that on your digital logbook too. Look for anything that might be out of the ordinary, because the worst thing you can do is put your information in front of somebody and have them start to ask for a calculator. Because if they do, it's over and you did a poor job. They may ask you some questions about it, and you will have a great group of answers because you understand your hours. Hopefully you were super smart and went ahead and created a cover sheet that showed all of your totals, all of the different types of flying, all of your certifications, and then any errors, like an addendum down at the bottom, and what they mean, where they came from, and everything else. Because a logbook is a legal document. And so you swear under perjury, fear of perjury, that you are answering honestly with your logbook. Mm-hmm. And so that is so, so, so important. There are airlines in the United States that turn away more than 50% of the people they invite to interview because they have logbook problems. And it drives me up the wall because I talk about this stuff on my show incessant, like without end. I literally, if you listen to my show, I talk about the same three things over and over and over. I don't change it. And somebody else is not listening to it. And it hurts their opportunity. And I hate that. I don't care for me. I care for them. So that is thing number two, is that your logbook is your livelihood. If you're not already using a digital logbook, do it. I still use a logbook. I've got it here on my phone. It's called Aeros, AIROS, and it uses ADS-B data to record all of your flight information. So you just type in your tail number after a flight and it pulls it all in there, and you don't have to do any math. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is assign a landing. Maybe you went and did some pattern work at another airfield and you just add that in there. Like, that's a sweet way to do it. So don't, like, just be careful with it. And then the third thing is dress for the job you want. Okay. I think that I have seen people and I get calls from hiring directors at airlines to say, hey, look, I need you to put the alert out. People need to wear a suit. You need to wear a suit. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you show up in a polo shirt and a short sleeve shirt and some, you know, some fancy tennis shoes, that's not it. And I can hear you laugh, but it's true. Ladies, women, I need you to dress conservatively. Like, don't distract the people in your goal is not to be distracting. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. If you're distracting somebody, if you're wearing the crazy socks, I'm wearing crazy socks right now. If you're wearing something that the kids today would like, you know, something that you see on TikTok or whatever, don't do that. Wear a starched white shirt and a conservative tie. Pick your color. Don't pick purple or orange or whatever. Pick red or blue or, you know, something general, something where you're just going to fade in with everybody else.
Nick, allow me a question here just came to mind.
Yeah.
What about the color that fits gently to the airline logo or brand or something? What do you think about this?
I think it's fine. I think if you're going to fly for Delta, their colors are blue and red. So, I mean, there's a 90% chance you're going to fly for blue and red. Isn't Ryanair's got the yellow harp on the tail, right? So is that right?
Yeah, I guess they still have this. I'm not up to date with all the liveries, but yeah.
Yeah, I think their livery had, like, so if, like, I think it's blue and yellow, like that could match. You could, I don't think you need to focus on that. If you try to focus on that, you're going to overdo it by accident. So you need to find somebody 25 years older than you and say, hey, look, I have an interview coming up and it's important that I wear a suit. What do you think looks appropriate and conservative? I don't think that if you're young in your 20s, I don't think you should have another 20-year-old pick it out. I think you should look for a 40-year-old to pick it out. Yeah. Because that, like, you can, there's so many different like fashion statements. And if you, because here's the threat. Like, why is he saying this? Because when you go interview, there's a good chance that you're going to have a pilot, maybe two pilots, and a person that's a human resources, like just a professional interviewer. And that person, that pilot might be 65 years old. That HR person might be 75 years old, or they might be 20, and you don't know. And so if you dress the part of, if you're 24 and you dress the part of a young person, they may look at you and not take you seriously. Mm-hmm. And so what you need to do is dress like every other pro. Now, this is tricky. You know, my grandmother's family is Dutch, and I keep up a lot with my Dutch family, and they have great fashion, and everybody's very fit and wears the nicest clothes and is like very fashionable. Everybody seems, all the Dutch have just skinny leg jeans and all the things. Mm-hmm. And so like, maybe that's the cultural look of your country. And I want to be aware of that. And so you need to know that yourself. You need to have that understanding and conversation ahead of time with like, what's too much, what's not enough, because you want to undersell your clothing, but you want to oversell your professionalism. And so if you walk in there and you're wearing a bright paisley shirt with a striped tie, you may be like, they, you might get a, become a TikTok influencer from it, but you're very unlikely to get a job at a conservative airline. Because why? Because why? Because why are you getting hired for that job? Are you getting hired because you look awesome in a paisley shirt? Hell no. You're getting hired as a flying insurance policy in a $50 million jet with 350 people on board and their families depending on you to keep them alive for the next hour and 45 minutes. And you have to show your professionalism to keep those people alive. And that's how you do it, by showing up ready to play, ready to focus, and not distracting because I look cool as shit. No, I'm safe and you can depend on me. If you can do that, you've won the game. And that's the first step of getting ready for an interview.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you already answered a lot of my in-depth question here. So,
well, you said you wrote down nine pages of questions, yeah, is what
this
you told
is,
me.
As I said, I love to be overprepared for interviews. This is Buddy. My job as a podcaster. This is because not everybody is a professional speaker like you. Sometimes guests are, yeah, they keep you on the toes. Let's see it like this.
Well, I would also say, all of these people, I used to write down a bunch of questions. Now I don't. I check 2 minutes before I interview somebody. I look at my calendar to see who the person is. And then I have asked them a couple of questions like, who are you? What are we talking about? What is your company? Blah, blah, blah. And then I glance at that and I'm like, okay, we'll figure it out. But I think that the beauty of the podcast is that I have grown to be able to engage people. Like, I see this on my daily level. Most people, where I live in Georgia, nobody knows that I run this podcast. I don't talk about it to anybody. I have like one buddy. We just recently moved here. So like all the people that we know from church and around the area, like nobody knows, like they walk in, if they were to walk into my studio, they'd worry I was doing something weird. But I like, that is a beautiful thing, is like the podcast and putting yourself out there and having these conversations like we do. I don't know if you have noticed this, but I have been able to engage people in a conversation in person so much better. And just ask, because just like you're doing now, you ask the question, I talk for 15 minutes. Why? Because I love to hear myself think or speak. And I love the feeling that I get of speaking with somebody. And so you just being quiet and letting me speak, like I'm getting all the satisfaction out of it. And that translates so well to everyday life. And I have gotten so much more opportunity and because people want to hear themselves speak. And I throw it out there, I let them speak, and like the things I receive back are so much more impactful. And so I encourage everybody, start another podcast. Come hang out with us.
Yeah, you are the expert. I am listening very curiously to you. But we had before, Nick, three things, and now let's point it down to one. So let's put the system the other way around. Allow me a question. What are the most common mistakes? I know you already pointed out 1, 2, 3, but what are the most common mistakes you see from otherwise well-qualified pilots during interviews? So maybe, I don't know.
Okay, mistakes. Let me whittle it down to three real quick. I'm going to say
you can come up with one, you know, the most common.
No, mistake. I can come up to three. It's the question is whittling them down to three. I would say this is important also. The ability to sit. This is one mistake right here. Do you hear the space and the quietness in this show right now? I'm not speaking and I'm taking the time to think. Mm-hmm. And I can sit here and calmly organize my thoughts and be deliberate with my words without the pressure of filling the white space. When people are not speaking, they get uncomfortable. They feel this need to constantly fill the void. If you're interviewing me, mm-hmm, and you ask me a question like this, there is a... And I sit and I pause and I look and I just take a deep breath and I take even 15 seconds or 10 seconds. The other person on the other side of the table often feels the need to fill that space, to say some words, to add a second part of a question, to do a thing, to do a this, to do a that. But in an interview, they are trained professionals to sit quietly and let you answer that question. Mm-hmm. And you can take the time to organize your thoughts by taking a couple of breaths and thinking. When you ask me, what are three mistakes? Like, I can think of 100 mistakes. And the problem is that I can think of 100 mistakes. Now I have to think of what are the three most impactful things that I can deliver to the thousands of people that listen to your show that want to get a job. How can I be impactful for them? And the first thing I can tell you is be okay with silence. Be okay to organize your thoughts. Don't sit there for 5 minutes like a dummy, like your brain just shut off. But do take a breath, get organized, think about what you're going to say, because the first thing people don't do is think. What they do is start. And if you start before you are ready, you're going to sound like a fool. And I see it. I see it on my show when I'm talking to people. I see it in myself. When I'm asking a question to somebody else, I see it at every single convention I go to. I'll probably talk to between 1,000 and 2,000 people. And I hear them stumbling through things when I ask them a couple questions. They don't think about it. But I'm not hiring anybody, so it doesn't really matter. But if, like, that's one important thing. The second part, which I think is more of an American thing than a European thing. You're going to laugh at me, but I think this is more of an American thing. Oftentimes, people from the U.S. don't come with their game face on. They don't come with that mindset that this is a professional environment. I have to be a professional. They can often be too relaxed. They can often tell too many jokes. They can often put themselves in a position to where they are looked at as a jokester. And I am the most of this. Like, I am the person that is absolutely like this often. And it's off-putting.
So almost overconfident.
Overconfident, 1,000%. And every European listening to this is like, yeah, every damn American I've ever met. And that's even to the point I tell this story about one of the sayings that I have around U.S. aviation. I say this line often. I say, don't say fuck. And apologies ahead of time if you have to edit the beep thing or whatever.
We don't edit anything. And I would disagree that this is a typically American thing. Overconfidence
okay. Absolutely
exists also in Europe. But as I said, Nick, your words, no editing.
Good. But I say don't say fuck a lot to people, because I was in an interview where it was during COVID and I got this job with an airline, and we did online Zoom interview. Everybody got a job offer, and the last step was to fly out to the headquarters and get your logbooks verified and have them take a picture of your passport and whatever, and make your ID and do a drug test. That's all. There was no more questions, no more nothing. You just come, do the last little bit. Congratulations. Here's your start date. So I am in a room we start out in a large room with like 50 people, and then they bring you into a smaller room. That's a conference room where they're just they're getting your logbook, they're getting your documentation, they're coming back, and they just shuffle you through different stations. And I'm sitting there in a room with five or six people, and this one guy is telling jokes, and he's like, let me tell you about this fucking guy. And as he said that, one of the HR people walked by. They heard him say that word. They stopped and they came back in and like, hey, are you such and such? He's like, yeah. He's like, I want you to come with me. And they walked the guy out of there, and he was gone for the rest, like no job for him.
Yeah.
Because of his language and because he was too casual and was cursing. So I tell everybody, don't say fuck. And I didn't even come up with that. A friend of mine came up with that, and I just thought it was so relevant. And so I keep saying it. Now it becomes this weird tagline. So that's number two, I guess. This is a long answer. I'm sorry, pal. The third and final thing that I think a person needs to do in the interview the mistakes they made. The third mistake is that they don't take it so seriously and they don't get prepared. I think the biggest mistake a person can make is to not be prepared for an interview. If you are a professional interviewer, if you go from airline to airline to airline to airline to interview, then you probably know how it goes. But if you don't, if that's not your job and you don't interview professionally at airlines for some reason, then there's a good chance that you are not sure about what kind of questions they're going to ask you. And each company is different. And each company has their own values. And each company has their own culture. And each company has a different idea of what they're looking for in a pilot. And it's important for you to understand that and to be able to answer the things that you're asked with impact. And that's, you know, this is how this all got started. And I work with a company called Spitfire Elite Interview Consulting, and this is what we do. We spend our coach, I've got almost 100 coaches that are airline pilots at every major airline in the United States, a lot of international pilots, we specialize in US hiring. However, all of this kind of falls into a similar situation and similar mindset. And so people not preparing and getting ready to do the reps. Imagine playing in the final game of the World Cup, but you guys didn't practice at all. And you just showed up. You're going to get beat. You're going to get destroyed. You're going to be shown the door. Imagine what that would be like. Imagine getting sat down in an F1 race and you're sitting across from Michael Schumacher, right? And he's going to kick your ass all day long because you've never driven an F1 car. Like, you have to know the rules and you have to know what you're getting into. And people that rely on themselves, that think, hey, I'm a good talker, I'll probably do okay, those are the people with the highest likelihood to fail. And then when you do fail and you look back, is it worthwhile to say, oh man, maybe I should have done interview prep, or maybe that to me, like, it costs money. It costs real money to go do it. But I look at it as if it's insurance, and it's an opportunity to make sure that at the end of the day, whether you get the job or not, you can say, I tried everything I could to put the odds in my favor. And so that's the number one mistake I think people make, because when you're looking back on it, you're like, man, I wish it would have done this, or wish it would have done that. Think of that ahead of time. Think of what your no answers would be, and do those things first. That way you can put everything in your favor.
Nick, we are breaking the record, the 1 hour record, including the intro outro of Stefan. We are already over 1 hour, and you promised us 40 minutes. It's incredible. Thank you for every word. But yeah, I mean, before we finally wrap up, because you said you have, there's somebody waiting for your help, and I don't want to occupy more of your time than I already did. It's incredible. Thank you. Before we wrap up, is there anything left you want to share with our listeners?
I want to first say that I love this show, and I love listening to the variety of guests that you get. The fact that you had Mentor Pilot on here, I was so excited to listen to it. First off, I'm a huge fan, and second off, like, I want to be him, right? I love it. I love the fact that I can meet a pilot from Austria, and I can meet a pilot from Pakistan, and I can meet a pilot from Botswana. And we can all sit in the same room and have a wonderful, wonderful time together. And it is a beautiful part of this industry. And it's what I love most, is the ability to sit down and have full conversations and know that we all have the same passion. We all have the same love, and we all don't have real jobs, because all we are pilots, and I can't believe they pay us for this. And that is because I've had all the jobs. I've worked in all the high rises. I've worked finance. I've worked I've sold paper. I've done all the terrible jobs. And this is the best job. It's also the best hobby. And that's what I also love about it, because what do pilots want to do when they're not flying to get paid? They want to spend their money to go fly because it's so fun. Yes, it's expensive, but golly, it is the most fun. And I love that. I love that. I want to encourage everybody to go do the thing that you want to do. Do not, if you're listening to this and you want to become a pilot, well, go do it. Go do the first thing. If you don't know how to do the first thing, send me an email, podcast@spitfireelite.com. What do I do? What do you recommend? We'll work on it together. I talk to hundreds of pilots every single week because I think that it's important. If you're going down the professional road, start getting your LinkedIn in order. That's important. Find me on there. We'll be buddies on that. Find a mentor, find somebody that can help you, find multiple mentors. Don't just rely on one person. And the last thing I would say is make sure you get a nap, because that's a great way to stay motivated. Jürgen, thank you for letting me be part of your show. I'm so excited to hear my own voice again on another channel.
So many questions left, and I hope you give us the chance for a follow-up interview sooner or later.
Hell yeah.
Nick, it was, as I said, an honor to have you here, and thank you for every second and all your words and advices.
Cheers, mate.
All right, and that was the end of the video. Jürgen, well done. I hope you had a great time. I really enjoy listening to Nick. Very, very nice guy. He sounds like the kind of person you could sit down with and just talk for hours about aeroplanes. Obviously very experienced, as we just heard, you know, a whole career from Navy flying and airliner flying, all kinds of aircraft. Currently flying the 757, which I'm very jealous of, because it's one of my favorite aircraft of all time. So how was the interview for you, Jürgen?
Yeah, really an amazing interview. I told you in a private conversation that I was really not, I don't know, I was not aware of this kind of, you know, normally when you are an interviewer, you ask a question, you get the answers. And there was already in the first minutes a sort of kind of a dialogue going on. It was fascinating for me. I mean, Nick is a great person. He is a great educator, a great communicator. And I'd say, if you didn't subscribe to his podcast, do it today. You can also subscribe to Aviation Quest DC if you haven't already done, would be the next. I mean, with these two podcasts, also the Ready for Pushback podcast, especially the solo episodes, I couldn't do it. It's really, Nick got there some talent in really educating and communicating with people. It's all I can say, this man is much more than a pilot, but it's I'm also looking forward to, you know, to keep an eye on him. I'm really curious where his life will lead to. You know, I think there is even more. There is more in Nick than it's really interesting. It's for me, yeah, a fascinating man. It was a fascinating podcast, and really also a podcast experience for me as an interviewer I've never had. I think I don't know how many podcasts I've recorded now. It's far over 850. And it's really, Nick was for me, it was fascinating. It was a honor to interview him. I say it straight away.
Great, great. Yeah, I loved listening to it. I was a bit jealous that I wasn't there. I think he's the kind of person. I think if I would have been there, we would have been on for like 2-3 hours. He's the kind of pilot I really like, where you just talk about flying and aviation and it never ends. You know, we call it hangar flying. So yeah, no, a really cool guy. And I agree with you. I think there's more to come from Nick. And I really, really hope that maybe at some point in the future, he will come back and grace us again with his presence. Well,
yeah, and I mean, besides ready for Pushback podcast, certainly also his Spitfire Elite interview consulting. I think it's really a valuable resource for any pilot preparing for the next step into airline operations. I just get, from my point of view, this is a great team, and they are giving 100% for their clients.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you haven't checked Nick out, please do so. He's certainly a very valuable force if you're in the aviation world, if you want any kind of advice. And even if not, you know, just listening to him, like I said, he's a very likable, very charming individual, and obviously very, very knowledgeable. And that combination makes him great as a podcaster. So, yeah, Jürgen, any final words? Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I think in the second episode, definitely you check in with us, and we have a long haul flight on YouTube. What about this? Huh? This is a, you know, real world long haul from America to Europe and all the way along, so to say, communicating or having fun with Nick and learn from Nick.
Yes, I would have to recreate the longest flight in the world. You remember we talked about this before, 23 hours or something. Then maybe
but
we
Stephanie can... Stephanie will agree. I think this podcast is worth listening twice. I mean, this was, what was this? What is a podcast webinar or seminar? It's, I don't know how to call it.
Yeah, I mean, lots of really, really good advice, and advice for free. You know, so if you are interested in this kind of stuff, you've just been given a huge amount of very valuable information that will help you in this industry. So I think that was very kind of him to go down that route.
But sorry for interrupting you. You're right. You already have proven on your FS Clips YouTube channel that even 23 hours of interview could be covered by a flight of yours.
Yeah, but I also told you I'm not willing to do that again, to fly for 23 hours nonstop. But anyway, I really hope we can make it happen, and love to be there to join in.
Yeah, and maybe one final thought from my side to close this episode, Stefan, if you allow.
Yes.
If mindset or interview nerves are something you, dear listeners, currently dealing with, feel free to reach out to me via our homepage AviationQuestCC or LinkedIn. I'm working more and more in this area. Yeah, it's really super fascinating. Also writing a lot in the moment, and yeah, it is a super fascinating area, and the first conversation with me is always free and simply about understanding where you are and whether I can help. So I think, Stefan, I'm pretty straightforward and approachable, so to say, non-salesman person.
Absolutely. I've known you for a very, very, very long time. And like I said last time in the last episode, there are many... let's put it this way, there are not many people as qualified as you when it comes to mental strength. And if you don't believe me, read up Jürgen's bio, and you know what I mean. So, yes, yeah, that's what I have to say.
Again, happy that this is not a video podcast, flashing Jürgen. And all I can say, my LinkedIn profile is quite up to date. And yeah, it's under my real name, certainly. And yeah, happy to see you there. And Stefan, I think really our podcast, it's going on. What is 30 for a podcast? Is this, so to say, becoming adult?
Yes. Is it like, if two people do podcasts for 30 episodes, does that mean we now have our silver wedding anniversary or something? I don't know.
Wow. don't overdo it. You have a family.
Exactly, yes. Well, anyway, I still enjoy myself immensely. I think it's great. I have a lot of fun. I love all the people we have on. Super interesting boys and girls. And yes, there will be girls in the future. We're already talking to them. I have a great time. And I really hope the listeners enjoy themselves as well.
Yeah, as I already pointed it out in the premiere episode, I really hope and I am looking forward to have a long-term project with this because it's really, it's fascinating. It's fascinating also because of guests like today's guest, Nick Fialka. Nick, thank you one more time from, so to say, Vorarlberg to Atlanta. And yeah, Stefan, thank you for your time. And I'm already looking forward for the next episodes. And dear listeners, yes, it's worth to subscribe to Aviation Quest to see because there are already pre-recorded episodes of more, yeah, guests. I just say worth listening twice.
Yes, absolutely. So also from my side, thank you, Jürgen, for the interview. Thank you to Nick for giving us his time. And to all the listeners out there, thank you so much for your support. And as always, we look forward to seeing and hearing you in the next episode. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Aviation Quest CC, Stories from Above. For more information about this episode and everything we do, visit our homepage aviation-quest.cc. We appreciate your time and support, and we'd love to have you back for the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay curious, and keep your passion for aviation flying high.